If you've got exercise-resistant pockets of fat, keep one thing in mind. Pockets are for cell phones, not fat cells. Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can get rid of fat pockets non-surgically with cryolipolysis. It freezes fat cells in specific areas so your body can just flush them away, forever. Visit theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca and find out how Dr. Lista freezes out fat with no downtime. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. Very cool.
This is the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
There's nothing quite like a Game 7, certainly in hockey. No, we're not going to see any of those in NBA anytime soon. Maybe the final one at some. It's not been the conference finals that folks dream of in the NBA, but the NHL has been an entirely different story. We know the Rangers and the Lightning are going to a Game 7. That will be played on Broadway at MSG, and the numbers are just scary for the Rangers on home ice in elimination games and Game 7s with Henrik Lundqvist in net. I believe 7-0, the mark, on home ice in Game 7s with King Henrik between the pipes. Question is, are we going to get a Game 7 out of the West Final? And if we do, this might go down as one of the greatest playoff series we've ever seen. And it's funny because I thought I was only going to be saying that about last year's Hawks-Kings series, which I thought was sensational in the West Final. Back-to-back years, West Final might be the best series we'll see. More on that with Mark Osborne. How are you, Ozzy?
Hey, Ryan. How are you? I'm doing great, thanks.
Well, good to chat with you. This is a treat of a set of conference finals we've had.
Oh, it certainly has been, just dating ourselves back to last night with the Rangers on the brink of elimination and, you know, seeing what they've been able to accomplish, really, the last couple of years. King Henrik Lundqvist record when facing elimination. I think we've all documented all the statistics and gone up and down all of those types of things. And, you know, one thing that I think can say of the Rangers is just their resiliency. And that's kind of the way it ends up working, I think, for the most part in the playoffs with, you know, there is so much parity in the game. And a lot of these games have been so close in some respects in both conferences, and I'm happy to see a Game 7 taking it back to New York. It's going to be a crazy, lively building, an original six, and I'm obviously hoping for the same thing with the Blackhawks. I'd love to see an original six Stanley Cup final.
The one thing from the East Final that I've sort of been building a case towards this argument, and it's entirely padded everything I wanted to try to prove. Momentum certainly exists in games. We know that. We see the wild swings. We saw Anaheim up 3-0, and we saw Chicago storm back. I mean, you can feel momentum change. Mm-hmm. But if you look at this East Final, game to game, it is really difficult to argue that you can take momentum from two nights ago into a different building, perhaps, and keep it. It doesn't seem to work that way.
No, you know what? And that's kind of maybe the funny part of the playoffs when you do get down to this point, Rye, with equally matched teams. And yes, momentum, to be able to take momentum. And I kind of equate it with, you know, when a team has either, you know, fallen short like the Rangers did at home, you know, home ice they had. They could have been leading the series after game number five. Instead, Tampa Bay goes in there and pitches a shutout. And now all of a sudden what happens for those particular players with the Rangers is that your focal point just becomes that much more intensified. And I've always found that it's much easier, I think, to stay focused. Your level and your compete level becomes that much more. I mean, it's hard to imagine why it would ever change in a playoff series, but when your backs are to the wall, those extra loose pucks, those battles along the wall, making sure you do the little things that's going to ensure a victory. It just took that Ranger first goal, which, 3 minutes into the game on the road takes the home crowd out of it. And while Tampa Bay may have had an edge in shots in the first period, you saw what, you know, Henrik Lundqvist was able to accomplish with a big save on Callahan. He made another great save on the power play on Steven Stamkos. And then all of a sudden, the tables turn a little bit, and you become the confident group in playing with a lead, and that's one thing I think for the most part, with all of these teams, and in particular a team coached by Alain Vigneault, I mean, they're a real methodical group that plays well in all zones, and everybody buys in as a collective five-man unit.
We're chatting with Mark Osborne. He's got your pregame tonight on Sportsnet 590, starting at 7 as we get set for the Hawks and Ducks. Game 6 from the Madhouse on Madison. Just to get back to that, your point on momentum, the Rangers had won 4 in a row after winning 2-1 in Game 1 over Tampa, and you're thinking, here they go again. You can punch their ticket to the East Final, low scoring. This is exactly the Rangers team we should have seen coming. And then, boom, back-to-back games, they allow 6. Now Tampa's in the driver's seat. 12 goals in 2 games.
Yeah.
You're heading, you've got Game 4 on home ice. They get blown out 5-1. I mean, back and forth, back and forth. I can't wrap my head around it. I don't know what to expect for Game 7.
Yeah, I don't know either. I anticipate it's going to be what do we know when all of the aforementioned things that you talked about with, the ability to score, the Rangers' ability to score. I think one of the things that we've been able to certainly appreciate or know full well, Tampa Bay can score. They led the National Hockey League in that category over the course of the regular season. And you know the playoffs become a whole different ball of wax. Tampa Bay had to do what they needed to do in game number 5, Rye, by saying, okay, we don't necessarily feel that we want to trade chances. We've got to learn to win maybe at the Rangers' style of play. And they did. They played a much more conservative style in game number 5, and they waited for a break in the second period when Stamkos got in behind through the neutral zone, and they had an odd man rush, and Filppula ends up putting it in the back of the net. And then all of a sudden, now the pressure goes to the home team, and that was the same thing yesterday. I mean, remember, it was still a 2-1 lead entering the third period, and when you get that third goal, it was reminiscent of game number 4 when the Rangers won 5-1. So there was a lot of similarities. I think the youthfulness of Tampa Bay perhaps gave in a little bit on both of those games, and so there you go. Who knows what we're going to have on game 7. I'm sure it's going to be a great game.
You played almost 1,000 regular season games in the NHL, 87 in the postseason. How many game 7s? Can you remember off the top of your head? Was it a lot,
I think
a few?
It was about 6 or 7 of those. I mean, back when I started earlier in my career, the first round, it was only a 3 out of 5. Went into overtime in game 5 in 1984 when Kenny Morrow scored. I was a member of the Rangers, so that was a vivid memory. I fast-forwarded in 1986. We were in a game 5 in the Philadelphia Spectrum, and I had the good fortune of scoring the game-winning goal in the third period, so that was certainly a highlight for me. And then, of course, a number of overtimes in 93. I mean, we went to 3 game 7s. Borshevsky's goal in Detroit in overtime, Dougie Gilmore's double overtime at Maple Leaf Gardens. So you know the intensity level of what that's all about. Game 7 against Los Angeles with Wayne Gretzky claiming of all the great games that he's played, that was probably his greatest game that he saw. 3 goals and 2 assists, and they go to the Stanley Cup Final against the Montreal Canadiens. So I think one of the keys, and I heard John Cooper talking about it yesterday with his players, that they're one game away from getting to the Stanley Cup Final, and one of the most difficult aspects of the playoffs is to be able to curb your emotions. It's difficult to sleep in the afternoon. You're excited, and by the time the puck drops, emotionally, unless you're really prepared emotionally, you could be already mentally drained before the puck's even dropped. And so I think that's part of the process for these younger Tampa Bay players. But nonetheless, the team that's been there and done it before, I think they're a little bit more in the driver's seat, and that would be the Rangers.
It's funny you mentioned just the mental preparation and making sure that just being calm and relaxed sounds like the simplest thing, and yet it's probably the last thing your mind wants to do when you're thinking about the stakes and could we be golfing in 2 days? Could we be hoisting a trophy? I mean, this is how players measure themselves, not by career earnings, but by Stanley Cups. You want to win. These are immensely competitive humans. And I was struck listening to Ryan Getzlaff after that incredible win that they had in game 5, where they blew that 2-goal lead with less than 2 minutes left. Taves again off an incredible angle off the pad and in of Frederik Andersen. And he's chatting post-game on ice level about what he was doing. He's the leader. He's got to set the tone. He said, I just wanted to be as calm as I could be and relax, because I knew the other guys would look to me and see that and they would relax. I mean, it speaks to just how important not being tense is.
Well, again, a player who speaks out of experience when you're, you go through Ryan Getzlaf's career, even dating all the way back to the 2007 Cup win, with Randy Carlyle behind the bench, the Olympic gold medals. If those are the things that you experience as a great player, and so you're able to bring that sense of calm. And lo and behold, we weren't sure how long overtime would go, right? And it just goes to show you, I think the players were even really surprised on the Brian Bickell when he failed to dump the puck in, and it was a turnover, and then 45 seconds in, Valesky scored. So I think a lot of the players didn't even have an opportunity to settle in, and the game was already over. And that's just the breaks, momentum, mistakes, costly mistakes at inopportune times. So let's see if the Hawks are able to battle back tonight. It's a tough building to win if you're an Anaheim Duck, and you can be sure that the roar on Madison will be alive and well tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Anaheim's a better team. I really do. I think they're deeper. I think James Wisniewski would be the fifth best defenseman at a minimum on Chicago. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think you look at some of the guys, they're healthy scratching. I mean, Anaheim's probably the deepest club I can think of in recent years, if not ever. And yet, if Chicago is down one or two, by no means is anyone running to start up a betting account and put money against them. They just seem to be clutch. And I don't like that terminology. I don't necessarily believe in it. And yet there they are. Every time they need a goal late, they seem to get one.
Yeah, and even after the first period when I think the Hawks have played their worst period in about 19 years, I think we're dating ourselves all the way back to 1996. I mean, down three, Cobb, and outshot, I think it was 13-3. I mean, it couldn't be any worse. And we thought, okay, the next goal, you're going to see Corey Crawford, Toll, Darling will go in, and they'll have to try to find a way to win in game number six at home. Well, you get that first goal, and then all of a sudden, momentum starts to change. They start to believe in themselves. And the funny thing on the other end of the equation is Anaheim, for whatever reason, decided to sit back a little bit. I found their defense backing in a little bit more. There was more room through the neutral zone, and then obviously Chicago started coming. So lo and behold, you get momentum on your side, and for a team as experienced as Chicago, you can sense it and feel it that they were going to find a way to tie the hockey game. We didn't expect after it was 4-2 that they would do it in dramatic fashion, but that again, you tip your hat off to this team and players led by Jonathan Toews. Never count them out because they've got a passion to win, and they're not satisfied even with two Stanley Cups under their belt.
This is an immensely tough market to play in as a hockey player, and I don't mean to suggest that players aren't well compensated and life isn't good, but a lot of guys get tarred and feathered in Toronto and leave with the reputation of a guy with nothing left, only to prove elsewhere there's still lots left. Larry Murphy would be your classic example from a long time ago, went on to Detroit and I imagine picked up some rings before he left after people thought there was no tread left on the tire in Toronto. What do you remember about Francois Beauchemin and his final days in Toronto? Because he's been great for Anaheim.
You describe what I've just heard you talk about Larry Murphy is that when he came and was signed here with the Maple Leafs, Brian Burke brought him in here, obviously one of his guys from the Cup win in 2007. It just did not work out for whatever reason. I don't know if it was just a lack of structure that he seemed to need when he had Randy Carlyle in Anaheim, and it just didn't work out for Beauchemin. I thought his career was basically done, and I was really surprised that Anaheim wanted him back, and in fact were willing to give up a young player in Jake Gardner, and to boot an injured at the time Joffrey Lupul. And Leaf fans are kind of saying, "Wow, we got the better of that deal, and look what our future looks like." And of course you can make that argument, but what Francois Beauchemin has been able to do since his return to Anaheim is quite remarkable, Rye. You look at his minutes, he's a leading minute cruncher on the back end. His positional play is really good. He plays with edge. He moves the puck well. It's almost like, and I kind of feel it myself as well. I was able to play here with the Leafs in the 80s with Olchek and Lehman, and then when Eddie and I got traded to Winnipeg, I just didn't feel good in the system there that I didn't feel there was enough structure for my game. I got traded back here to Toronto, and then obviously, getting thrust in the checking role with Zezel and Berg. I mean, I felt that I played, some good hockey at that point as well. So it's funny how those things work in different organizations with different coaches. But as you mentioned, Francois Beauchemin has been a surprising player for Bruce Boudreau on the back end in his early to mid-30s.
About 90 seconds more per game than their next highest minute player, Hampus Lindholm, who's got an immensely bright future ahead of him. And really the only, I guess you could call graybeard or veteran on that back end with so many young defensemen. I don't know how Bob Murray's done it. I think the toughest asset to stockpile in the league, I think, is young defensemen that, you know, can skate and are good in both ends of the rink. They got four or five of them.
I mean, isn't that the key for, I think, the way that this game has transitioned in many respects? It's certainly with the rules from 2005 after the lockout where they tried to get away from the hooking and the holding. It's a skating game, and of course, it's a puck possession game. It's moving the puck type of game, and when you've got guys that are good skaters, I mean, you look at Cam Fowler, his versatility and agility, so you put Lindholm and Sammy Vatanen and him together as a young group, it's very impressive they've been able to do this and play at this level at such a young age.
It is impressive, and I don't know what more you can say about Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry. One draft year, 03, they get Getzlaff in the teens, they get Perry very late in the high 20s. It would give hope to other teams that, yes, you can strike gold with late picks, but with the other side of the coin is, boy, Anaheim, they do not mess around drafting and developing.
No, absolutely. And if you go back to that 2003 draft, Ryan, I mean, that's arguably one of the deepest drafts in the entire history of the National Hockey League. I know Leaf fans are hoping that this draft, you talk about that this being a deep draft, and now you go to your scouting staff, and hopefully with Babcock behind the bench, a good draft this year, that may be a springboard for Leaf fans for years to come.
What do you expect them to do here with the GM position? I've sort of been making the case that if they aren't really feeling the urgent need to add a GM before the draft, you now will have gone through a deadline and a draft without a GM. Maybe you don't even need a GM. You've already got people doing the GM's job.
I don't want to hear that way. I mean, Brendan's already commented on the fact is that, you know, we rule by an executive committee, and I think now that you've got Mike in there that's had a great relationship with Kenny Holland and almost, you know, he'll certainly provide input as to structure and what they like with Mark Hunter there. If they decide to bring one other guy into the mix that's had some form of experience, whether it's a Sean Burke, a Rob Blake, I mean, those are some of the names that have been bantered about there. I think it's a committee that possibly could, you know, get things done. It's still a learning curve for those guys. I mean, Mark Hunter's you love the fact that he's in the rink all the time, but again, only being about 6 months into the job, there's still a lot to learn about pro hockey and what it means to be at the NHL level.
What do they do it for? I mean, obviously it's dependent what Arizona does at three, but because we assume that McDavid and Eichel are going to go 1-2, that would be logical, but they're going to get a player, but I would sort of be curious if they don't take Mitch Marner, if that doesn't sail, have other teams worried. Because I don't know that any other team will know him better given his ties with Mark Hunter and the Knights.
Well, there's no question about that. And the people that I've talked to in regards to Mitch Marner and, you know, the way that he competes, the comparisons, I mean, it's hard to make comparisons to NHL players and put players in that situation where all of a sudden they have to feel they have to be like a Patrick Kane. But I think that's the pedigree that Mitch Marner brings to the mix. You know, we've kind of beaten it to death as far as Dylan Strome and his, you know, his great year that he had playing along Connor McDavid. I would be tempted to think that this group with Mike Babcock and the way that he plays defensive hockey, I'd be surprised if they don't draft Hanifin with the fourth overall pick. And then you've got him and Morgan Riley as a good, solid foundation. You win from the back end out. So that's a thought that I have as this draft unfolds.
We're looking forward to Game 6 tonight. It's an 8 o'clock start. We have it right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Yourself and Gord Stellick with the pregame at 7. One question before you go. We're going to open the phone lines after you. If you had to pick between Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, it sounds impossible, but you had to pick one, who would you take?
Well, it depends on the situation. I mean, Patrick Kane has got an uncanny ability and a skill set to be able to shoot the puck, and he's a real tough guy to contain. And so we've seen him do it in their first Stanley Cup, the game winner in overtime. But Jonathan Toews, I mean, you've seen the level of compete that's risen not only in game four, but in game five as well. He's around the puck. He's in front of the net. I think that's one of the things that the Blackhawks had to do better is to get in front of Frederick Anderson. So either one, Rye, I am thinking that it's Patrick Kane this time. Tase has done it for a few games already.
Yeah, you know what? There's no wrong answers here, is there?
Yep.
They both got a Conn Smythe. They both got two rings, and we can't wait for game six tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, Rye, have a great day. Thanks so much.
That is Mark Osborne. He's your co-host of Stanley Cup Playoffs on the Sportsnet Radio Network. They get started at 7 o'clock tonight, getting you set for 8 o'clock puck drop. Stellick and Osborne, always great work they do in coast to coast. If you just happen to be on leaving on a jet plane today, just find your local Sportsnet affiliate. You'll be able to hear the game there. Who would you take? We asked Mark at the end. You need a scenario, and Mark sort of said it. Well, you know, depends on the case. Well, why would it depend? Well, if you're an expansion team, and you have zero players, and you have the first overall pick, and for some reason you could pick one of these two guys, there's one scenario. And then other scenarios, maybe you're a team that has pieces in place already, so maybe you're the Leafs. If you could add one of those two, which would you choose to add? So I'm going to let that to be open to your interpretation. 888-666-0590, 416-870-0590, and *590 on your Rogers cell phone. Kane or Taves, who would you take, and why? Tell you who I'm taking. No doubt about it, Jonathan Taves. And I shouldn't say no doubt about it because Kane's unbelievable. And Kane's numbers in the playoffs are incredible. Here's the story on both of them. Same age. Kane's going to turn 27 in the fall. Taves already is. We know Kane's a little slighter. He's a little smaller. 6'2 versus 5'10, 175 versus 200. Kane's got a slight edge in points. He's just under a point per game in nearly 600 hockey games. But in the playoffs, 106 points in 108 games. Incredible. Meanwhile, Taves, 97 points in 109 games. So why am I taking Taves? He's a mature kid. He's one of the youngest captains in the history of the NHL. I think the youngest captain of an original six franchise. And he sets the tone culturally. He gets the room on board. You can find players like Patrick Kane in terms of skill set, in terms of their ability to finish, to put the puck in the net. But you can find them on teams that are great or teams that aren't great. The one thing that Taves has is follow me. Here's how we play. And you don't want to say Patrick Kane's not a leader because he is, but Taves is probably the best. Let's go to the phone lines. Richard in Woodbridge. Taves or Kane? Who would you take? Who would you build around?
Good morning. Like I told your screener there, this is a no-brainer. Jonathan Taves, he is the captain. And just like you said, follow me. I lead by example. He's a 200-foot player. Those are the kind of guys you want in your dressing room, on the ice. These are the kind of guys you want when you have rookies to groom them, to teach them. This is the way you become successful. This is the way you win championships.
It's a good call, Richard. No complaints from me. I'm with you. Let's go to Brent and Barry. Brent.
Hello. How are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm taking Taves. Who do you want? Kane or Taves? One pick.
I'm taking Taves all the way. Natural born leader, proven winner. He can play, like that gentleman said, the whole game.
Yeah.
Under the net, along the boards. You know, Kane, you can't knock it, but he's a little light. I'll take Taves any day.
And it's funny because Kane's the guy that puts up the numbers. Taves, I mean, either he's there, the numbers are exceptional, but not Kane level. And yet here we are, we're picking culture over goals in a way, aren't we?
You know what? You can get guys that, well, maybe you can't. You can get guys to score goals, but, if you know, a leader's a leader, no matter which way you look at it.
I like it. And a Canadian boy, too. Hey, good Winnipeg, Manitoba boy, Johnny Toes, let's go. Yeah, I think we know who grapes to take, right? Let's go to Rocky and Markham. Who do you like here, or is this too tough to call?
See, I really think it's up for debate because, you know, Jonathan Taves, I consider him a leader. He's a great captain. But at the same time, you look at Patrick Kane. He led the league in points before he got injured, and Patrick Kane was active in the playoffs. If it weren't for Patrick Kane, would they make it this far? Because even though they acquired Antoine Vermette in the trade deadline and they gave up a little bit of their future, and it's hard to say right now because If it's for the Leafs, they say that a player in this coming draft is similar to Patrick Kane's Mitch Marner. Would they go after a guy like him? Because Mitch Marner has a lot of talent, and this draft is deep. So it's so debatable to his point. So I would take Patrick Kane just by a whisker, in my opinion, because he's a great scorer. And some people say he's Phil Kessel emulates the same game as Patrick Kane, but I would pick Patrick Kane over Phil Kessel regardless.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. And you mentioned a great point about Kane. He wasn't supposed to be getting back until the Western Conference Final. I don't know if they're here without him. So by all means, take Taves, but let's not overlook the value Kane provides. I don't think they're in the Western Conference Final. They're down 3-0 in game one to Nashville in the first round. They had their way with Minnesota, no question about that, but they're just not the same team when he's not there. And obviously it would be the same for Taves. Robert in Toronto, who do you like?
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Oh, Jonathan Toews all the way. Patrick Kane's a pure goal scorer, but Jonathan Toews sets the tone. He's the consummate, unbelievable player every team wants. His tenacity and his effort is by far. He doesn't take a shift off. This guy is the best. You build a team around him. That's the player that sets the tone in the dressing room. He's always skating hard, what you want out of your hockey players, especially your captain. He's one of the best, if not the best captain in the league, in my opinion. Actually, he is the best captain in the league.
Tough to argue with the resume, right? He's got two rings. He's got a couple gold medals. And there he was in game five, down two with less than 2 minutes, says, okay, I guess I'll do it myself.
Absolutely. And the thing is, like I said, he never takes a shift off.
I agree, Robert. Good call. Let's go to George in Brampton. Who do you like?
George. I think both players are elite players, but just building a hockey team, I think you always have to build down the middle. I think Toews would be a no-brainer for me, because I think if you put Toews with even a guy like Kessel, all of a sudden Kessel could play against other teams' top lines. Thanks for
the call. All right. I think you were thanking yourself for the call. No sweat. Thank you for the call. And you're right. Phil Kessel, a lot of the beating he takes around here is because they don't have a Toews that he can follow. If you've got Phil Kessel in Chicago on the wing, there's no issues. No one's snapping photos of him at Harvey's. Because he's not the guy that has to go face the media. That's not who he is. He's not a leader. He's a great hockey player. Let other people wear the letters. He can follow. Absolutely. That's the problem with what's going on here. That's why you take Toews, because he changes the culture in the room. Joe, we'll go to one more call here. Joe, who do you like? If you had to pick one, maybe you're the Leafs, maybe it's an expansion team. We're dreaming here, but Kane or Toews? Joe gone. Okay, no worries. More hockey talk. We got a guy that knows Patrick Kane's background more than most this side of the American-Canadian border. Chris Peters of CBS Sports will talk to us about what Kane looked like in the American National Development Program and a few others that have come out of there, including JT Miller, who had a big game last night. 4 points. Who? Yeah, 4 points. Must-win game for the Rangers. And a kid that will go first overall next summer who is obliterating Patrick Kane's numbers. That's something. And it's coming up next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
On your Wednesday, a reminder, the matinee start today for the Jays. Your pocket calendar is wrong, and you should leave work immediately. These are my orders. It's Ryan Pinder filling in for Jeff Blair, in case anyone's asking who's ordering you to go to the game. And a round table starting at noon right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The good news about the matinee, well, aside from afternoon baseball, which is great, is that we'll also have tonight's Game 6 between the Ducks and the Hawks starting at 8 o'clock, with the pregame going at 7 with Mark Osborne and Gord Stellick, right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan as well. So busy day here at the station, and I wanted to turn our attention to exactly what in the world the Leafs are going to do at 4 and some other topical news from south of the border. So we welcome Chris Peters of CBSSports.com. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well, Ryan. How are you?
Always good chatting with you. I love the insights, as you seem to be my insider of things college hockey, things U.S. development program, and maybe some of the stories that we don't shine enough light on north of the 49th. Why don't we start with the coaching carousel before we move other spots? It sounds like Ken Hitchcock and the Blues have decided against an annulment. They're going to try to work things out. They're going to talk about their feelings. What's happening there?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, it seems like everybody is on board for another year, and I think it's a really good thing, a one-year deal for a coach at Ken Hitchcock's age, and obviously with the way that things have gone in St. Louis in the postseason, never a sure thing. So I think it's good for both sides to see if they can give it one more kick at the can here and get things corrected in the postseason. I know there's been a lot of chatter about, you know, players kind of or Hitchcock falling out of favor with the players there. You know, David Backus kind of backed that down yesterday. So, you know, I think it's just one of those things where the Blues have been so good in the regular season. They just have to figure out how to get over the hump. And part of that might actually be, you know, just trying to shore up goaltending. You know, I think it would be settled there. But that's been an issue for them in the playoffs these last few years. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily on the head coach.
At least three vacancies, San Jose, Buffalo, Detroit, by my count, all still needing head coaches. San Jose has been tied to some interesting names. Apparently, they're interviewing anyone that sends in a cover letter and resume.
Yeah, it sure seems that way. Yes, if you've ever been a head coach or have, you know, known a head coach, you might get an interview. So, yeah, but I think that's good. They need a thorough process. They need to talk to as many voices as they can. And I think, for one, Doug Wilson needs to figure out, you know, what kind of ideas are out there to improve his hockey club as it stands right now, and even through an interview process and by talking to a bunch of head coaches. Even if you don't hire that guy, you might get some ideas, or there might be some things that you can take out of that, which I think is a good thing to do. You know, it's been a wide array of coaches too. You know, Randy Carlyle's name has been thrown out there. You know, Dan Bylsma has been thrown out there. So, you know, you're talking about a wide array of coaches with different, very different views and different systems, and have varying degrees of success. So I think I like the thorough process. That's a team that really needs to do some soul searching, not just in terms of, you know, postseason, getting through the postseason, but just in general, and figuring out what went wrong last year and trying to get the ship corrected, because that's they have talent on that hockey team and it shouldn't go wasted.
Yeah, and not unlike the Blues, I think they're going to have to look at the crease as well. One of the names I have not heard before, and it comes, maybe a week or two after Dave Haxtell was hired by the Flyers out of North Dakota. Now, what is it, David Quinn, the head coach at BC? Is that right?
Yeah, you know, his name has been thrown out there, and I am not surprised in the least to hear that. He has NHL experience. He was an assistant coach at the Colorado Avalanche. He's coached the American Hockey League level as a head coach with Lake Erie. You know, he's at Boston University right now. He's in his second year and just had, you know, the Jack Eichel experience at Boston University, and Eichel really sung his praises after that. A great developer, a guy that is very good with the players. I think he's been well-liked wherever he's been, and a great hockey mind as well. So he's been through a lot of different levels of coaching as a college assistant. He was at the National Team Development Program as a head coach, and now as a college head coach. You know, I think it would take a good offer for him to leave Boston University, which is where he went to school, and you know, he took over for the legend there. And he managed to get the team to the national championship pretty quickly, even though they did end up losing. So a really interesting guy, I think, a guy that has NHL potential for sure. And it's just going to come down to the right situation for him to leave Boston University, which is a really good situation, one of the best in college hockey. So it's going to be really interesting. But when that NHL comes calling, you know, these college coaches, they don't get that call very often, it seems. So they'll definitely be listening.
Ching, ching, ching. They could probably pry him out of there if they needed to.
Yes.
Detroit. Sounds like Jeff Blashill's the man. Has this been done yet, or why isn't it done if everyone's been pointing at this for 2 years now after they paid him handsomely to coach their American Hockey League team?
Yeah, well, I think part of it has to do with the fact that Grand Rapids is still alive in the playoffs, and that Ken Holland wants him to focus on the playoffs. And I there's nothing wrong with that. I think that it's pretty much a done deal in terms of, you know, outside speculation and everything else. And obviously Mike Babcock even dropping that Blashill's the next guy in line. And really, I think it couldn't be a better situation for Detroit. They've got a guy that coached under Babcock that has been within the system for several years now. He's been a great developer. They're going to have a lot of young guys. And he's a guy that's won at every level. He won in the USHL. He won in college hockey. He turned around Western Michigan's program in it really, really quickly. And he's got a lot of success as a college assistant as well, and already a Calder Cup as an AHL head coach. So a really bright guy, a young guy. I think the players will love him. I think that he will have respect in the dressing room, though he's not a former player and not a guy that necessarily has a ton of pro coaching experience. But having been within the system, and they'll have that familiarity, I think it'll be a pretty nice transition for them. Big step up for Blashill, but one I think he is more than ready to take on.
The Leafs select fourth in this summer's draft, I guess a month away or so, from Florida, where it'll be humid and muggy. It'll be miserable outside of that rink in the suburbs of Miami. But the Leafs brass will be happy to be there because they're picking four, and they get Nashville's first rounder. What would happen if Arizona doesn't select Noah Hanifin? Do they take him, and who is he? We haven't seen this kid as much as you have.
Yeah, well, I have no idea how the top five is going to shake out. I mean, obviously we know how one and two are going to go. How three, four, and five are going to go is really, really interesting. I know that there's been a growing, kind of growing momentum for Marner and Strome over Hanifin. I haven't seen those two enough to know, so I'll just basically, what I know about Hanifin is I didn't think that, as somebody that's covered American prospects and watched a lot of these guys as they were growing up, I didn't know if I'd ever see a prospect as polished and as talented coming out of the National Team Development Program as I did with Seth Jones a couple of years ago. And all of a sudden, 2 years later, here's Noah Hanifin, or 3 years later, Noah Hanifin. So he is an incredible talent. He's a great skater, moves the puck extremely well, a very bright hockey player, thinks the game well. He played at Boston College this year and played a year ahead of, his grade. He should have been a senior in high school this year, accelerated his schooling, and then, stepped right into one of the best programs in college hockey and was, in my opinion, towards the end of the season, their best defenseman. And that included a first-round draft pick in Michael Matheson, Ian McCosh, and a high second-rounder. So he's an incredible talent and a guy that I think would make a lot of teams better really quickly.
That certainly fits exactly what the Leafs need is, a young defenseman to put with Morgan Riley. We don't know that Cody Franzen will return. He's a UFA that was traded. Is Seth Jones a fair comparable? Because you mentioned where they were polish-wise, but do they play the game the same way?
I think similarly. I try to steer away from comparison just to not build up false expectations. But I do think that in terms of where they're at developmentally, it's very similar. If not, Noah may actually be a little bit ahead of where Seth was in his U18 year, which, he played at the NTDP, and Seth Jones played at the NTDP. Hanifin played at the college level a full season, and both were impact players at the World Junior Championship. So, they're following a very similar path, I think, in terms of physical maturity, mental maturity, and just hockey IQ. They are very close. I think Hanifin's probably a better skater. So that's kind of where he's at. I think he could be an NHL defenseman next year. If he goes into a situation where they're going to just get pounded every night, I think it probably would be better to either send him back to college, or you also have the option to put him in the American Hockey League if you draft him onto college hockey. So there are a lot of options that you can use for his development, which I think even makes him a more attractive prospect, just because you don't necessarily have to send him back to junior, which would probably be a step back for him at this point, just because he's been playing up a level for pretty much most of his young career. So he's a pretty impressive talent.
We've been getting people to call in today and tell us who they would take if they could only have one to build around, Kane or Taves. It's an incredibly difficult question. A lot of people leaning Taves with sort of the tie going to his leadership skills, the culture he creates. But Kane is obviously the prolific scorer. Not many can do what he's done. 106 points in 108 playoff games. That is the definition of coming up big in big moments. And yet his numbers from the American Development Program being shattered by the guy expected to go number one next year, Austin Matthews. Tell us about his interesting story coming into his draft year next fall.
Oh, yeah. Well, he is he's an incredible talent as well. I thought, you know, we look at the guys that have come through the NCDP, Kane, Eichel most recently, Phil Kessel, and guys like that. And Matthews has had the best season of all of them, and by a lot. He had, 116 points this year. Kane's record was 102 in his U18 season. And you have to consider who these guys play against. It's against the USHL. It's also against Division I college teams and international competition. He produced across the board against those teams. And so he's a native of Scottsdale, Arizona, grew up a Coyotes fan, found hockey because of the Coyotes. So, I mean, he's an expansion baby, which the NHL is going to love heading into the next draft year, especially if, those Coyotes end up with a high selection again. But this year is going to be really interesting because we still don't know where he's going to play next year for his draft season. He has options available to him. He would have to accelerate schooling to go the college route, which would cause him to do school all summer, which is not very fun, but it's been done before, obviously, Hanifin doing it. He also has the option of going to the Everett Silvertips in the WHL, or he could go to the Swiss Professional League, and apparently has a contract offer on the table from Zurich. And if he accepts that offer, it would be an unprecedented move for a North American prospect to go over to Europe. But in his case, as a very physically mature kid and an emotionally mature kid, that might actually be the best option for him, both from a development perspective and from a draft preparation perspective. So he is a remarkable talent with a potentially remarkable story left to tell.
And he'll be there at number one in 2016, we expect. Who knows if the Leafs will be there. Certainly the Coyotes look like they'll be in the mix. Really quick, we got almost no time, but your thought on tonight's game six between the Ducks and the Hawks. Does your gut tell you one thing or another?
Well, I like Chicago at home. I think that they will at least extend the series. I don't know if that means they're going to win the series, but I think that the Ducks are going to have a hard time putting away Chicago tonight. They're going to leave it all out on the table, and they'll have a couple extra days here to rest and recuperate before they have to play their game seven if they get there. So I think Chicago's going to put it all out there tonight, and I definitely like their chances on home ice. I think it would be a different story if it was headed back to Anaheim, but instead with it in Chicago, I just like their ability to control the game a little bit more at home.
Yeah, it's a fair point, especially with that short blue line. They just on home, you can set the matchups, you can shelter guys a little better. I agree with you. It's tough to bet against the Hawks on any day. Never mind. A must win with their season on the line on home ice at the Madhouse. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ryan.
That's Chris Peters of CBSSports.com. He's one of their NHL writers and a guru of all things NCAA, U.S. development program. Some good stories there, and you can find him on the Twitter pretty easily. Throw his name in, Chris Peters, and, of course, the CBS tie-in. Game 6 tonight goes at 8 o'clock. We've got it for you, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A 7 o'clock pregame with Mark Osborne and Gord Stellick. Also a reminder, Blue Jays, it is a matinee today. It is not a night game. 12:30 start from the Rogers Center. They look for a fourth win in a row and a potential sweep of the White Sox. It is Sarmadja, the ace of the White Sox. Oh, I suppose I got Chris Sale. So one of their best starters for the White Sox. And for the Blue Jays, it'll be Marco Estrada. A roundtable with Mike Wilner starts at noon. Speaking of which, Baseball Central next on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.